I'm Matt Bush with BPR News. I'm speaking with Dr. Chris Cooper of Western Carolina University about the many, many political issues going on in North Carolina right now. Chris, thank you as always for coming in.
Yeah, great to be here.
So Governor Roy Cooper gave his State of the State speech on Monday evening. The term that was used, at least in some of the reporting, and the Associated Press used this term in particular, called it a soft sell of a lot of Democratic policies. Talk about why the governor took this approach now that his party does have at least some power in Raleigh, but still doesn't have a whole lot.
No, I think that's exactly right. They still don't have a whole lot of power. He still doesn't have a lot of institutional kind of levers at his control. So I think all he can do is try to convince folks. And I think kind of taking this more moderate stance is probably a pretty smart move. If he came out swinging, I think the odds are really good he would strike out.
The Republican response was similarly somewhat muted to the speech. So now that this is the power dynamic in Raleigh, we've had a month, we've seen some of the bills that have come up. None of them have been particularly surprising. Mm-hmm. What might we get done now? We've seen each side begin to play out their cards.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see a lot of big bills coming out of this session. It really seems like what we're seeing are kind of symbolic action, and I think they are playing nice on a few of these issues. There's a few bills circulating right now to tell the local schools exactly what to cover. So say, hey, you should do more about financial literacy, you should do more about civic discourse, but we're not seeing a lot of the big ticket items get introduced.
One thing that was introduced were two bills that were introduced by Henderson County Republican Chuck McGrady about independent redistricting, nonpartisan redistricting, and ending gerrymandering. His belief that these might pass in this particular time period is based on, as he said, neither party really knows in 2020 who's going to be, after the 2020 election, excuse me, who's going to be in control. How valid is that?
Well, I think we've obviously seen a shift in the last election. Obviously, a lot of that, though, was brought by this larger blue wave. So I think there's no telling exactly what we're going to be seeing in 2020. Part of it, of course, is the makeup of the districts. Part of it's going to be who's on the ticket. I think there's a lot of question marks. I think what we know is it's unlikely to be as solidly Republican as it was a few years ago.
If we were to have more constitutional amendments, then one of the bills regarding gerrymandering wouldn't put it to the voters.
Yep.
After we just had this last election, which we'll get to in a bit, the court ruling of the six amendments that were on the ballot, how much of a driving factor is that for voters to go to the polls?
You know, I think it can be a driving factor. So we think that if these are salient constitutional amendments, ones that tend to matter for a lot of folks, they can increase voter turnout up to about 3 percentage points on average. So that's sort of, you take all the different states that have had these, put all these bills together, you see about a 3 percentage point bump.
Obviously, there'll be other people on the ballot next year, too, that people might want to decide, much like President Trump or Senator Tom Tillis. But going back to the 2018 election and the constitutional amendments, there were six on that ballot last year. Four passed. Two were struck down by a judge's ruling last week, and probably what we would say maybe were the two most contentious that passed, and that was voter ID and capping the state income tax rate. Tell us what you think of this ruling. It was very specified, and is this going to hold up in a higher court? Because obviously there's already court action from Republicans against this.
Yeah. I think there's no way of knowing exactly what's going to happen in the higher court, so I don't have any great tea leaves on that. But I do think this reflects how many of the kind of legislative battles, ones that we tend to think of are going to be happening in the legislature, actually moving to the judiciary. I think our judiciary in North Carolina is more important than it was just a few years ago, and this is really a good illustration as to why.
I think what struck me about it was that it was these two amendments. There's still two other amendments that passed that had nothing to do with, and if the ruling is that this was a illegally gerrymandered legislature passing these things, what about the other two?
Yeah.
Is that a fair assessment to say, like, these two amendments, knowing these were the contentious ones that were picked out, two others passed, and they're still on the books?
They are still on the books, right? And so I think certainly the voter ID was the most contentious by any measure of the six that were introduced, and was the most contentious of those that passed, you know, absolutely. So I think that's what we're all trying to figure out. If this holds up, what does this mean for the other amendments? And frankly, what does this mean for all sorts of legislative actions that are created by these districts?
Right. This could have a mass. If this were to hold, this could have a huge impact on future constitutional amendments like the gerrymandering one, or really kind of anything that goes through the legislature, right?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, this is, you know, it's very early. Obviously, we've got, you know, both sides still battling it out. But yes, no matter what the outcome is, it's going to be important for anybody who cares about the policies that come out of North Carolina government and the policies that have come out of North Carolina government in the recent past.
Moving to the 9th Congressional District, we'll have another election there this year as the seat will remain open for months after the State Board of Elections ruling that did not certify last year's election based on alleged ballot fraud. Republicans right now struggling to get a candidate. Mark Harris says he will not run again. Mm-hmm. The man who held the seat before, Robert Pittenger, says he will not run. And former Governor Pat McCrory says he will not run. What kind of candidate can the Republicans put in there? And given the taint of this last election, is that really going to stick to whichever candidate Republicans end up nominating?
Right. So this is a fascinating field, right? So you've got essentially both of the kind of prominent recent, somebody who held the office and somebody who could have held the office, both saying they're not going to run. You've got Dan McCready, the Democrat, saying he is going to run. And right now on the Republican side, the most prominent person is a county commissioner who acts as if he is Boss Hogg. And I mean that in the most literal sense. He dresses up like Boss Hogg. He wears the white suit of Boss Hogg. And he actually owns a gun range just south of the North Carolina border. And so he is actually somebody who's been very popular. He got the most votes of any county commissioner in that county in the last round. And so right now that is the most prominent Republican running.
Long term, what impact will this decision to redo this election have on voter fraud, voter access? On voter rights. This has obviously been an issue not just in North Carolina but nationally. But we now have a specific case where we saw voter fraud, at least alleged voter fraud, that was enough that a new election was called for. Long term, what impact is this going to have on voting in North Carolina?
So I think one of our colleagues, Mike Bitzer at Catawba College, actually had a really good analysis of this. He said, look, this is about election fraud, not voter fraud. We've had this conversation about voter fraud that should really be a conversation about election fraud. This didn't happen because somebody had the wrong ID. This didn't happen because somebody impersonated somebody. This happened because somebody took advantage of the entire system. And so the effect I hope it has is to kind of shift our focus from voter fraud to the larger issue of election fraud and really looking at the entire election apparatus we have in North Carolina and in the United States more generally.
Lastly, we move to the 3rd District of North Carolina out in the eastern part of the state. That's another seat that's open right now because of the death of Walter Jones. How's that race shaping up to replace him?
So you've got a really crowded Republican field. So this is a very, very Republican-leaning district. There's not any real prominent Democrats that have entered the race yet, but I think you have 5 Republicans, including 3 sitting members of the General Assembly that have announced. So Walter Jones had the reputation, and it turns out the evidence supports the idea that he was a very moderate member of Congress. He actually had a more liberal voting record than 97% of the Republicans in Congress. In other words, he was a moderate. He was a centrist. The folks running to replace him tend to be towards the right of our General Assembly. So I think no matter what happens, what we're going to see is a more ideologically extreme member of Congress. So if what we were hoping is kind of moderation to come out of this seat, I think we're actually going to see the further decline of moderation.
Well, Chris Cooper, as always, thank you for coming in.
Yeah, great to be here.